Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be upon you. Assalamu alaikum. This is Wali Muhammad, the communicator, and we thank you so much for being on our program today. This is the program called Religion Means Alive, and our host, everyday host, is Imam Alfred Muhammad. And we thank you so very much for Brother Alfred for giving me the opportunity to put our special program today, The Communicator, which comes on at a new time. You can hear us every Tuesday from 6 p.m. until 7 p.m. Central Time. And we have a special program today, a little deviation from the regular Communicator show with commentary and music. But today we have a very special interview I want to convey to you. And before we do that, I want to let you know we're going to get this CD. It's a brand new CD that we have a interview with Imam W. Dean Muhammad. This was recorded. This was the last interview that I did with Imam W. Dean Muhammad back in 2001. The name of the interview was called World Peace. He talks about his father, his mother, Mr. Farrakhan, Malcolm X, and others. So you're in for a big, big treat. So brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, before we start the interview, we'd like to open up with our prayer, which is called Al-Fatiha, and this is the prayer for God's protection and God's peace and blessings. I will give it to you in Arabic, excuse me. It's Bismillahi Rahmani Rahim, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahmani Rahim, Maliki Yawm Adin, Iyaka Na'budu, Wa Iyaka Nasta'in. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم الصراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. All right, thank you very much, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. We want to get started with the interview with yours truly, Wali Muhammad, the communicator, interviewing with Imam Waqifuddin Muhammad. So please hold down. You're in for a good treat. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Father, the thoughts and music with a message, and we are deeply, deeply humbled and honored to be in the presence of Imam Waqifuddin Muhammad, Imam W.D. Muhammad, the leader of the Muslim American Society, and we say peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum, brother Imam.
Peace be unto you, Wali. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much for being with us today. I have so many questions I want to just ask, so I'm just going to go right into it. You know, you're a world leader. You've been all over the world. You've met some of the kings and queens and dignitaries from all over the world. And the question I ask is about world peace. This is the biggest thing we're talking about, world peace. In your travels and, in, of course, in the reading and the scripts, in the scriptures, world peace, is that a reality today in the time that we're living in now? What do you think about world peace?
I think we're closer to world peace than we have ever been in the history of mankind on this planet.
That's a great statement there, because there's so much knowledge you hear about negativity, about the fighting that's going on all over the world. About the Middle East conflict, about the Palestinian and the Israelis and all of that. There is a glue that needs to be brought together. And can you expound on that in terms of bringing everybody together?
Yes. If it wasn't for politics, there wouldn't be these problems. These problems are not caused by religion. They're caused by politics, caused by government leaders.
Yes.
People that haven't been freed, they don't have a concept of government and human rights that have permitted them to make the progress that Europe and America has made and two other places. So they are really not, in my opinion, they are not as politically, as socially and politically evolved as we are. Not to say they are primitive, but I'm saying that they are not educated as we are. And I think that's the main problem. These leaders can manipulate them. They can keep their loyalty because they are not educated in politics and in, they are not knowing their humanity as they should.
Yes.
When you know your humanity, you value your personal life and the life of other people like you, other human beings. And then you can't have demagogues or dictators dictating a way of life that is against your human interests, you know. So we live in a world that is advanced in politically and socially, and the part of the world we call the third world, these countries are not industrialized countries, just recently coming into oil and whatever, and experiencing wealth. These countries are not socially evolved and politically evolved as we are. So it's going to take time for their publics to be educated, and I think the pressure is on them. It's very, very demanding on them now, and they can't ignore the civilized world. And I'm saying this not to say that they're not civilized, because in many ways, some of those people of the third world are more civilized than the average American citizen, you know, in many ways.
Yes.
But when it comes to world politics and governments and human rights, they are not as informed as we are.
Yeah. So the key, again, bringing it back to the family, community, that's a worldwide situation. That's a worldwide concern. And how important is that in the world, the family life, the family and community life?
It's extremely important. As you know, in our holy book, God says family has first rights in the book of God. Family is first. And Saudi Arabia is one country where family, I would say, value and consciousness is very, very high, very, very high. They think of themselves as family first. I would say second to thinking of themselves as Muslim, they think of themselves as family.
Right.
And they have a fast, strong family order there in Saudi Arabia. I say that to say this, family is good, but anything can be taken to the extreme.
Yeah.
Yes. The family of humanity is what God wants us to see in Islam. If we concentrate too much on our ethnic family, then we will go outside of the, the circle of Islam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of what the way Allah wants it to be.
Yes.
Going by his dictation.
Yes.
Right.
The family is the family of mankind.
Yeah.
As it is for the people of the book, Jews and Christians.
Why is that you think that the family has just been so scattered and splintered here in America, especially in the inner city, and especially particularly our African-American community?
This is not a nice one for me. Commercialism, commercialism.
Yes.
The business people, they have access to our families by way of the media, television, and strongest. And they come into our house and they do not ask us to permit them to talk to our little children.
They just walk right into the house.
Right.
don't ask any questions.
And talk directly to my wife, talk directly to my little children.
And say anything they want to say.
And say anything they want to say.
Right.
And then I have the proper crime to tell my children, no, you can't have that.
Yes. And so that, again, dictating the society, and again being on a warped situation then, because we seem to be going to another direction and not the direction to Allah, not to God.
Yes, family is, as I said, as when it comes to rights, family is first in the book of God. And I think that was revealed to Muhammad because in those days there was also, in fact, much worse than now, where people were exploited by commercial people, by business people. Their lives were exploited. The workers were enslaved almost,
yes,
by the rich, you know.
Right.
So I think that in the Quran, that is really addressing the family, immediate family, our small families that we have in our homes and apartments.
Yes.
But it's also, more importantly, it's addressing the family of mankind, and it is saying to the world that family is sacred, and the business world should not be allowed to exploit family ties and to divide family members. And they don't have a plan to do that. But coming into my house, selling my son some gym shoes that I can't pay for, you're dividing my son and me.
Right.
The wife, if she's strong, she can save us. I had a strong mother, as you know,
yes.
Your grandmother.
Yes.
I had a strong mother. Yeah. They couldn't get to us.
No. No, not at all. Not at all. Let's go back to Sister Claire Muhammad, my grandmother and your mother.
Yeah.
Get it back to that now. Again, very, very strong example of parenting and a mother. And of course, your father also.
Yeah.
Again, the mother being there in the home every day.
Some of the
examples, that you can share with us, some of the things that you coming up under your mother and some of the things that, that needed to help to mold you to be W.D. Muhammad today.
Yes, well, my mother raised us, I believe the oldest, Emmanuel.
Yes.
He perhaps was the only one that was a teenager and was giving some help to my mother.
Right.
The rest of us, except for my older sisters, the rest of us, we were young, very young, and we were raised by our mother. Because our father was, you know,
yes.
He was arrested and chased by enemies that were members of the Nation of Islam, but didn't agree with him on that he should be the leader. So that was a division. And then after that, he was troubled with, he was trying to build up temples all around America. So he wasn't in the house with us. I didn't know my father as a father in the house until I was about 14 years old. But he was released from his sentence for refusing the draft to go to the army. So my mother was the boss, and my father was more present in the house during those years than he was when he returned.
Right.
When he returned, he relaxed things,
mm-hmm.
And we didn't feel his presence there as we did on the mother.
Right.
Mom would say, you're going to be raised the way your father wants to be raised, or I'm going to kill you myself.
She was rough.
She was obedient.
Yeah, yeah.
She was obedient. She obeyed her husband.
Yeah. And she made sure that everything was in order.
Yes, and he was not just a father to us. He was a religious leader.
Yes. Now, how did you separate the two, or did you, with your father?
It was very difficult. When he bought me some candy, that's when I saw the separation.
Right. Then you see the separation. You know, given my own experience, I can say the same thing. It was kind of hard, you know, to separate grandpa from the messenger of Allah.
I know.
It was kind of hard to do that, you know, and you get those very personal moments. It was like this exploded with so much glee and happiness because you didn't see that too much, you know.
Yeah, but he said, "Why do you boys get up and take that trash out?" It wasn't Daddy talking; it was right. Messing with my mouth.
That's right. It wasn't just Elijah Muhammad. It was messing with Allah speaking.
Yeah.
Right. So that again, that had a very strong impact. Again, a lot of the people say, well, how was he as a dad? And you go to the baseball game together, and would you go out and have a good time? And
Well, we did.
Right.
We did. But like I mentioned Candace, he did more than that.
Right, right.
He would set up when he would have some free time. He would make sure he had some free time.
Yeah.
He knew when he was too absent,
yeah.
Too much absent. And he would take time to laugh and talk with us, ask us questions about our personal interests, what you're doing and what you want to do with your life. And that. He would do that. He was a father.
Yeah.
He was a good father. And he would say, boys, you all want to go ride with me? And back then, it was something to ride in a car.
Especially
for it's something to ride in a car. Now it's nothing, But then it was a big thing if he took us for a ride. And he would take us, he took us to Robbins, Illinois.
Hmm.
And he bought some Waldo's, some Waldo's plant, We brought it back home, and we ate Waldo's. It was a big time,
Right.
Occasionally, he would take us and get ice cream, bring ice cream back. My mother also made homemade ice cream.
Yes.
But a child.
Right.
Like McDonald's different from them for whatever you cook at home.
That's right, at home cooking.
Yeah.
Nothing like it.
No. McDonald's got first place now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
In fact then,
yeah.
That ice cream cone had first place.
Yes, sir.
We just going out to get it was exciting.
Right.
Because you didn't get out.
That's right.
Most of the bars in our neighborhood, they hardly ever got a ride in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Poor.
Right. Yeah. When you were growing up as a teenager, you got to be 14, 15 years old, and then you seen your father and working and seeing build the Nation of Islam, did you feel what kind of changes did you go through seeing when the FOI and Nation of Islam began to grow? How did you see that, from when you saw him when he was on the run all the time, and then now he's back and establishing the temples across the country?
As a boy, until perhaps I was about 17, 18, the picture of the Nation of Islam for me was a picture of a spiritual family.
Yes.
People who were spiritual family, believing in God and believing that their life was their world and the life outside of their life was a foreign world that was threatening their life and their world. So this is how I came up. The Nation of Islam gave us a sense of a belonging to a world that was threatened by the life of America, this world's life. I don't think most religious people that's like that. They just don't have they didn't have the extreme sense of separation from the world that we had.
Because maybe it was like an insulation type.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
It was. That was my idea. Of a picture of our Nation of Islam and the Ahmad al-Bilayt Muhammad, but until Malcolm came along.
Right.
When Malcolm came along, my father said, I got me a new man, I got me a new minister.
Yes.
He said, he's going to do things that you all are going to see, and we did see, and soon we were seeing that. We were seeing Malcolm's influence and how he was getting the attention of youngsters. He got the attention of the young. With that, we saw increased material growth, too. Al-Bilayt Muhammad had already gone into business. When he came out of prison, he said, we have to focus on business. And he himself led that development, opened the first restaurant on 31st Network, first bakery, 31st Network, first grocery store, right? 31st Network. And from there, it went to other places. He did it himself. He actually was a butcher. He was everything. He was the boss. He was the manager. He was everything. But he finally got helpers, and Malcolm came in, and he gave the community the spirit to really go out in the streets and meet the brothers and sisters in the streets and invite them to the temple. And he had a few words that he gave, that it was magic.
Right.
He said, he asked me once before, he said, I don't understand the lessons, because Malcolm came right to the ministry of prison, you know that.
Yeah.
He said, but he had read a lot. He knew about life. He was a reader, a person who was reading all the time, reading something all the time. He said to me, he said, Wallace, he said, I don't understand a lot of the teachings, like from the lesson. I said, I know what you're talking about. He said, I don't feel too comfortable with it when I'm talking. I said, well, you should work with what you feel comfortable with. He said, I feel comfortable with saying that we are living in modern Egypt. He said, and the President of the United States is the modern Pharaoh. He said, the author of Elijah Muhammad is the modern Moses. He said, that's what I feel comfortable with.
Good analogy.
And he got our attention, and he got African-American black people's attention on the street.
Yeah.
And we just had more material growth and everything else. Then I became to see the Nation of Islam in a different way.
Yes.
To me now, it's a movement to have a life of your own, not just spiritual life, but also material life of your own.
Yes. Now, Malcolm, again, he had that spirit and that fervor, and again, the youth, too.
He had the youth.
And I think he was, at that time, was he maybe the youngest?
I believe he was.
Minister at the time?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that was a minister of Negan. It was a minister of young T.
Right. So he came in there with as a fireball, and he was he was a rose.
Yeah. And if he looked at you, he said, what are you young brothers doing?
Yes.
He said, I mean, what are you doing to help all the Elijah Muhammad build the nation?
Right. He, to me, and I know I'll ask you, his spirit and his dedication, how would you measure that?
It's almost, there's no comparison. We have no one to point to say, this person, Malcolm looks like this person.
Yes.
Oh, Malcolm was very unique. He was the first one to have the courage and the energy to go out every day and long hours of the day and work to introduce the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his plan for the black people in America. He was the only one.
Right.
And there's no one to point to and say that he was like so-and-so.
Right, right. Yeah. So he was a forerunner.
But he influenced the growth of many like himself.
Yes.
And Minister Farrakhan was.
Yes, absolutely. Your personal relationship with Minister Malcolm, you and he were very close.
Yes.
And how did you...
And Farrakhan.
We were all very close.
Yeah.
All about the same age.
Yes.
How was that, coming together and being ministers, student ministers, and how was that, how did that come about in terms of you working with Minister Malcolm and with Minister Farrakhan?
Malcolm once came to me and he said, I got a question. I'm preparing my talk, my address today. He said, I got something I want to ask you. He said, and I looked at him because he could tell. He was a very sensitive person, dude. He took an interest in your personal life, you know. So he knew right away that I wasn't too comfortable with him asking me questions. He said, I talked to your father already. He said, your father told me that I want you and my son to get together. So I said, okay. And he asked me a question, and I gave him my answer, and he felt happy with it. And he was very happy with it. He's ready to go.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
As soon as he got something, he told me, he said he'd be in the barber shop, South in Africa. Said he was hear the fellas talking. Said he would pick up something from that conversation. Said he'd be so excited, he had to tell the man to hold up on the hair. Said, hold up, get your piece of paper now. And he'd go up and pass some notes for his address.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so he wouldn't forget what he heard.
Right.
He wanted to include his note.
Yeah.
So our friendship developed because of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I would have had a friendship with him, but I wouldn't have had that closeness and that confidence between us that we enjoyed. You know, I wouldn't have had that had not the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told Malcolm that I was special as a religious person, not a spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how was he accepted with the rest of the family, with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the family of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad?
Just like a member of the family. My mother used to call him son, and she called him son affectionately.
Yes.
With the same look in her eyes that she would have when she called me son.
Yes.
And she called me son only when she was feeling real good about it.
Right. So he was part of the family.
Yeah,
right.
And a few of my brothers, they loved him so much that they actually would do as much for him as they would for me or any other brother.
Yeah,
their brothers.
Yes.
Elijah Muhammad was one of them.
Yes.
Elijah Muhammad too. Julius. Yeah, he was one of them.
Right.
He loved Malcolm not so much. I don't know if the audience is aware of this. I know you are. But all the guys from Hamza and Malcolm love each other, just like father and son do. Yeah. And my father, I've heard my father call him my son.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, when you're real close, when you love each other a lot, if something happens to hurt that, it can go to the other extreme.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Then so from there, growing and moving toward into the ministry, did that influence you to actually get into your father actually say you're going to be we're going to put you into the ministry, we want to put you into a direction? Or how did that come about, you getting ultimately into Philadelphia, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, when I was, as far as I can remember, when I was playing with my friends, you know, a little child playing,
yeah,
he understands his friends, he understands
right.
his toys,
yeah,
he understands the girl he loves,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But he doesn't understand this big business of a nation, building a nation,
right?
So, but they would constantly remind me that they would fear me playing. Like my sister, your
yeah.
mother,
yes,
a lot of right. Maria. She once saw me playing, and she said, "Wallace, you're not like the other boy."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Remember, the Savior named you after him."
Mm-hmm.
She, yeah,
yes.
So that's just an example I'm giving you.
Right.
But what I heard not only from my sister and family members, I heard that also from senior members in the Nation of Islam.
Yes.
That were close to my father, friends of my father, women and men. They were all Brother John, a big John. Was a big John, my friend?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he would look like he would think sometime this boy maybe forget. He would say,
"Keep you on track.
Look at me. He'd get my eyes. He'd get my eyes and look me dead in the eye. WD." That's all he was saying. That's all he was saying. Of course, I get my WD from WD for Ron.
Right, right.
The one that brought the message to my father.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. So I had plenty of help to keep that on my mind.
Right.
And I knew it was very serious with him, but I couldn't. Really, to tell you the truth, I was thinking about what all children think about.
Sure.
And I was thinking, and like I was a little older,
right.
I was thinking that daddy's going to put me out of the house sooner or later.
Right.
And I need me a good job.
Yes.
So I was thinking about getting a good paying job. I thought about buying a semi-truck, you know.
Right.
I heard that could bring in good money and many other things, other jobs.
Yep.
That's where my mind was. But one day, on a Wednesday night, when they would sometimes invite the brothers to get up and try for the ministry.
Yeah.
This night, Minister James, you know this?
Yes, right.
Sheikh Shabazz.
Yes, right.
Minister James, he said, "You young brothers," he said, "well, any one of you all would like to come up and express yourself tonight?" And Leroy, our friend,
yeah.
You know how close Leroy are.
Oh, yes, yes.
Every day with Leroy. Okay. He said, "I'm going up." I was a little surprised. I said, "Okay." He went up. He spoke well.
Mm.
I was surprised by the way he handled it very well. He came and sat down, and he looked at me. He said, "Chicken." And then Mr. Dane said, "Is that the brother? Your brother want to come up?"
Yeah.
I got up. I was so stage frightened. I was frozen. I got up there. Now, I had been asked by my teacher to get up before the class, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it was very difficult. But this time when I was asked, I looked at the audience, and something changed in me.
Mm-hmm.
All the fear went away, and all I could see was their faces.
Yeah.
Sisters, old sisters.
Yes.
Young sisters.
Yes.
Mostly old sisters. Right. Smiling, looking at me, smiling, like my mother was smiling when she was pleased with me. Smiling, saying with their faces, "We are so happy that you came up to speak." I forgot about fear.
Mm.
And I gave my first speech. It changed a whole lot in the Nation of Islam. I said, "We give more attention to the devil than we give to Allah." I said, "That's not right."
Right.
I said, and we say, "In the name of Allah, in the name of the messenger," but we're told that Christians are wrong to put Jesus with God.
Mm-hmm.
I changed a lot.
Mm.
One day,
right.
One night,
right.
And a few minutes speaking, I changed a lot.
For someone
it went all over the Nation of Islam. And most of the ministers stopped saying, "In the name of Allah, the name of Allah who came in the person of
right.
Allah, in the name," you know how to use it.
Yes.
Most of them changed it.
Mm-hmm.
That young boy,
mm-hmm.
that they had so much respect for because my father had told them that I would be special.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then to hear those words, you know.
One little change. Raymond Sharif, he would make a point. Every time he got up to speak, he would say, in the name of Allah, mm-hmm. you know him, who came in the person of Allah, the deputies of Allah.
Yes.
And in the name of his servant and his messenger, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
He emphasized, make sure. I know DJ not one word. But you put some on the money, and you opened up some, you unlocked some locks in them.
Yeah. And never said a thing about it.
Yeah.
And my father never said a thing about it.
Yeah.
He never told me, you was starting to something new here.
Right.
Never said a thing about it. But he accepted it.
Yeah.
Yes. I said, we should say, and we thank Allah.
Right.
Muhammad. Yeah. That's the way they did it. It right. became the power for all nations.
It was such a glorious time, and still a glorious time to see the evolution of where the Nation of Islam came from during those early 30s and 40s and to where we are today. And there's so much more to talk about, because I can go and do a whole interview on your relationship with Brother Malcolm, because we did a television interview years ago about it. And ever since we did that interview, everybody's been saying, when are you going to do part two? When are you going to do part three? You're going to tell us a little bit more about what the Imam and Malcolm's relationship. Tell us a little bit more about this. I said, well, if I can ever get him on the radio or on the microphone again, we're going to talk about it.
All right.
Let's talk about some of the things.
Yeah, we need to, right. Because there's
a lot of misconceptions out there. You know?
We need the bright side.
Yes.
There's the dark side.
Exactly.
I learned being interviewed by a television host by like I'm being interviewed right now,
yeah.
You. I learned that what I was believing somebody else had said about Malcolm and my relationship was false. And I had told everybody, Malcolm would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
An interviewer told me, yes, he did. He told me that.
So
I stopped seeing Malcolm as a good guy. But he got desperate to save his own life and to stay in that focus. He became a backstabber. He stabbed me in the back.
Now, let's get to that point where that change, where that pivot happened. You know, where he was a part of the family. What happened? What, and in your mind, I'm talking about from the personal point of view. And what do you think made him? What happened to him to make him to do that?
Brothers and sisters, you're listening to an exclusive interview with Imam W. Dean Muhammad, with yours truly, Wali Muhammad, on our radio program called The Communicator. This is the interview segment of the program. Normally you're here, we're playing music, but today this is a very special interview with Imam W. Dean Muhammad, recorded in 2001, and this was the very last interview that I did with Imam W. Dean Muhammad on the Communicator program. And we're very, very proud that we have, and we're blessed to have, we have a copy of this interview. And you have the opportunity right now, brothers and sisters, so get a pen, get a pencil, and write this down to get the information as to how to get your copy of this CD. It's called World Peace by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. And you get this CD. It's very reasonable. We're giving you a very special price to get the CD. It's $10 plus $3 shipping and handling. So I hope you have a pen and pencil right now. And send your check or money order, only check or money order, to Wali Muhammad, the Communicator. And the address is 439 East 81st Street, Suite 100, and that's Chicago, Illinois, 60619. So send your $13 with a check or money order and send it to me right away, and we'll get it right back to you. We'll send it to you first class mail, and we'll send the CD back to you. So once again, you send it to Wali Muhammad, the Communicator, and that's 439 East 81st Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60619, Suite 100. We're going to continue with the interview with the Imam W.D. Muhammad. Listen, take notes. I hope you enjoy it.
Disappointment.
Yes.
Here's the man that he believed in with all of his heart and soul.
Yes.
And mind. And now he's forced to see that the man that he thought was his father, because you know Malcolm didn't have a father.
Yes.
And also his savior,
mm-hmm.
who saved them from the bad life that he had on the streets, from prison. Really.
Yes.
Now this man. No more can be trusted by him. He has to accept that the Nation of Islam was trying to discredit him and kill his image in the public eye and also in the eyes of the members of the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. So when he accepted that, I think he got sick, really.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this, I mean, when I say sick, I don't mean mentally sick. I mean the healthy man was not there anymore.
Yeah.
The man that could handle problems and handle situations, he was not there anymore. He was a desperate man, only trying to stay alive physically and also stay alive in the eyes of the people.
Yes.
Okay, so he became a very desperate man, and the degree of desperation in him make me say that he was a sick man,
mm-hmm.
a sick man.
Yes.
He couldn't make rational decisions anymore like he used to,
right.
like he had been doing before. I told him, I said, you are self telling me, because he told me on the phone, I said, you are telling me that they are out to kill you. I said, what are you doing about it?
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, what can I do about it? He said, you know, I left the fruit. I know what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that gave them the thinking. That wasn't the Malcolm that I knew before.
Mm-hmm.
The Malcolm that I knew before, he wouldn't take credit like that.
Right.
You know? I know what they think. I know their mind.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they're capable of doing. I say, but is it legal for them to threaten your life like that? I say, why don't you report them to the police?
Mm-hmm.
He said, Wallace, it is the police. It's the police too, the New York police too. I say, well, I still will report them to the police. I say, because the police are obligated to protect citizens.
Right. Right.
I say, if you go through there, maybe they'll see you differently.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't talk.
Right.
We couldn't talk. He had changed.
Yeah, he didn't feel comfortable, and he didn't feel that
he didn't want to trust the white man.
Right.
He didn't want to trust the white man.
Yeah.
And he was trying to handle it by himself.
Right.
And he thought the white man was behind it.
Yes. Did you feel that? Do you think his faith? I mean, really, had been challenged in terms of his belief and his
definitely so.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to the person that you enjoy a beautiful and perfect. Relationship,
yes.
love, relationship with, like a wife,
yes.
you know, you and your wife enjoy a beautiful relationship, everything is perfect, and then all of a sudden, one or the other find out that one is this Laura,
yes.
not Laura.
Mm-hmm.
The extreme that relationship can go to is unimaginable, you know, maybe somebody will be killed.
Sure. Yeah, and so that again caused, now what was, where was the last, do you remember, the last time you actually talked with him or saw him, you know, prior to him being assassinated?
The last time I saw Malcolm was when he asked me, would I talk to the prosecutor who was investigating and trying to build up a case,
mm-hmm.
trying to make a case against my father,
yes.
For his not respecting his obligation as a father to children born by wives.
Yes.
He said wives.
Right.
Those who didn't like him, they say secretary, girlfriend,
yes.
young girl.
Right.
So.
Right.
But I say wives too.
Mm-hmm.
I know my father. If he had a relationship with a woman, he did his best to take care of her and the children.
Yes.
I know that.
Right.
Okay. So I was asked to come and talk to this prosecutor who was trying to build a case. And I did it because I wanted to see what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did thinking, well, if it's possible I can help, I'll be there.
Yes.
I'll be willing to help. But I didn't like, I had told Malcolm before, I said, Malcolm, if you want the people to distance themselves more from you, I suggest start getting into the personal affairs of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I say, that's not the way
right.
to win. Now, you want to win the people. I say, you can't win the people. I say, you can't get the followers all like Muhammad.
No.
Right. And tried many times before, you know.
Yeah.
And no matter how great you are and how popular you are with them, you're popular because they love him and they love you for helping him more than anybody else has helped him. And but once they see you not like loving him, their love for you will be gone. So I'm trying to convince Malcolm, okay? But he insists upon doing this, and I, being the person I am, I want to know what's going on. So I went there. And the prosecutor looked at me, and I think he saw in my face that I didn't belong. He said, are you with us? I said, I don't know.
Right.
He said, well, you know what we're doing? I said, tell me. He said, well, your father has been involved with these young ladies, and we're trying to bring him to court. They want us to bring him to court. I said, are you with us? I said, no.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm looked awfully let down. He looked like he had been, like he heard the son had died that was close, very close to him.
Yeah.
And he didn't say a thing to me.
Right.
He didn't say a thing to me. That was the last time I saw Malcolm alive.
Hmm. And where was that?
It was in Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They came to Chicago.
Yeah. The and the way it was, you know, portrayed, and even in the history books, and even on the movies and things like that. You know, they never go into the reasons, you know, the real reasons why there was this, you know, the disappointment and all of that. But there's so much misinformation regarding Elijah Muhammad. And like you said, the image that they gave is that he was not taking care of his responsibility.
Right.
And that was the biggest thing that they used.
Yeah.
You know,
and like it's a big thing that this old man
right.
got five or six young girls,
right,
17, 18, 19, 20 years old.
Right.
But that man read in the Bible, and he was also followed the Bible.
Yes.
He didn't know the Quran,
right.
Followed the Bible. The teacher told him to use the Bible.
Yes.
Say they died in the Bible, you have to wake them up in the Bible.
Right.
Or they went to sleep in the Bible, you have to wake them up in the Bible.
Yes.
So the other Elijah Muhammad was the son of a preacher, and my grandfather, you know,
yes.
our grandfather, Wali Muhammad,
yes.
William Muhammad, before his name was changed,
yes.
Wali, Islamic name. And here's a man who reads in the Bible. He's told that he's a message of God now. He's a messenger of God, and he reads in the Bible where David and Solomon, all of them had all these young ladies,
right.
and had hundreds of them. You tell me I can't have seven?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it all fell to fill in the place. Just logical, right?
Well, it depends upon your taste.
Yes, exactly.
Solomon Elijah Muhammad had that taste
right.
of Solomon.
Absolutely. So that, again... That was not a true statement of, you know, that, again, I'm going back to it again because it bothers me personally to see how they kept, you know, in the media saying that, oh, he didn't take care of, you know, everybody.
And
then, how many people that he helped that didn't, that he didn't even know,
and
you
what
know,
about,
personally?
What
you
about
know?
Questioning the young lady?
Exactly.
Why did they come to this old man?
Right. Why did they come to him?
Right.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Why did they speak to this old man?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They had a reason.
Yes, absolutely. So there's so many things. Now that the other thing too, Brother Imam, is that now that we look forward from doing that time, that's almost 35, almost 40 years ago, you know, and to look at the legacy now of Malcolm and how you perceive him, how do you think he's being perceived now, 40 years later?
Well, most people are not thinking of Long Elijah Muhammad having more than adding wives, taking on wives from his secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are not. Most of the people are not thinking about that. They remember Long Elijah Muhammad that inspired them, like James Brown was inspired, and I'm telling you what James Brown told me himself to write the song "Black and Proud."
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
They seen him one of our most popular leaders in the church told me, he said, we're just talking about Long Elijah Muhammad like we are now, and not this seriously, you know. And he said to me, Wallace, we talk like this, Debbie.
Yeah.
Wallace. He said to me, Wallace, he said, Wallace, do you know what we call your father in our private meeting? I said, no, I don't. He said, we call him father.
Mm.
Isn't that something?
That's something.
And I'm talking about a man that had maybe all the African Americans in this country looking to him and respecting him.
Yes, yes.
He's that well known. I don't want to get his name
wrong. Right, right.
That's what he told me.
Yes.
So, and I meet so many that have told me that the Organizer Muhammad, they never belonged to the Nation of Islam. They were never Muslim. But our Elijah Muhammad inspired them to go back to school and make something of themselves. Many more tell me that our Elijah Muhammad was their reason for going into business and being, and they have become this successful because of our Elijah Muhammad turned them on to a life of dignity as a business person.
Yes, yeah. And do you feel that because of the negative or the lack of or the media not giving him the, you know, the credit in terms of notoriety and that he should be today. You think that's the problem? Maybe because of the media again and the misconceptions about the Elijah Muhammad, they're not putting him. You know, you don't hear that every day. You don't hear the things that the positive things that he, you don't hear too much about it. Not even in the history books. You know?
Well, let me say this: the media can't go ahead of reality.
Yes.
The media has to respect reality. If it's a bad thing, and their ethics oppose that or say they should expose that thing, then they do it. But black leaders who are loved by black people, and you know we have more people who will tell you that they appreciate all of Elijah Muhammad from the church life,
yes,
from the Christians, then that will tell you he was a bad guy.
Right.
Yeah. Most of them will not say he's a bad guy.
Right.
They remember him for the good he did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So being a father figure.
Yes.
That's what he was. He was a father figure, telling us to not to be lazy, clean up ourselves, do our, if you work for somebody, give them an honest day's work.
Yes.
Don't waste your time in foolishness. He was a father figure. So they remember him as such. And the media know, that in the hearts of black people.
Yes.
But they also know that he did things that have him also in disfavor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I can accept that the media does not give a lot of like Muhammad a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate the Chicago Magazine.
Yeah.
For saying that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was one of the people, also listed the Sun-Times,
yeah,
did the same thing. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that he was one of the 100 persons, I think they said, that influenced the course of Chicago's history.
Yeah.
And, you know, Reader's Digest, long before Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed,
yeah,
said that Honorable Elijah is on the cover.
Right.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the most powerful black man in America.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. Back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Yeah. The relationship, then we move on, because again, we could be here all day, but Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Uh-huh.
How did you two meet?
You must have heard it. I was a young student minister.
Yes.
And I was also the manager of the restaurant, the Muslim restaurant on 79th Street. And whenever there was a Savior's Day convention,
yes,
the annual coming together of all the followers of Elijah Muhammad at one place to hear him,
yes,
whenever there was a convention, Savior's Day convention, the places just became so crowded, we never could take care of everybody.
Right.
There's too many coming to the restaurants, you know. So I could see him as plain as I'm looking at you almost. And I see a guy with waves in his hair, process, you know. And the audience may not know what processing is.
Right.
Processing back then was, you know, you would go to a barber.
Relax your hair. And
yeah, you go to a barber. And the barber put lye in the hair. And he grease you all around the ears and face so you don't get burnt by the lye. And then he put that lye solution in your hair, and it comes out straight like a white man's hair.
Right. So
here's Farrakhan. He looked good.
Yeah.
And he came in, and he spoke to me. I didn't speak to him. He spoke to me first. He recognized me. He said, "You Minister Wallace, the son of Elijah Muhammad." I said, "Yeah."
Yeah. And I guess the way I responded to him, because I was a street boy too, yes, you know, not a bad boy, but a street boy. So I think he ran away, he knew that he could talk to me freely. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, I came. He said, I think I'm a government of the Nation of Islam. He hadn't joined it. He came to his first Savior's Day was in Chicago, yes. And there he made his decision to be a follower of the Army like Muhammad. But I think it was strongly in him. Mm-hmm. And he introduced his wife to me.
Right.
And she was so pretty, it was hard for me to keep my attention off of him, off of her,
right.
And on him.
Right.
One of the prettiest young women I had summer, you know. Now for me,
yeah.
You know, and he recognized that too, and he started some other conversations. It really got down. And he started telling me about his life. He said, "I need some help." He said, "I'm like Muhammad, will help me." I said, "Yes, he is."
You came to the right place.
He still did. He was called the charmer.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
And he was a calypso singer, and that's how he made his money. Playing guitar,
yes.
And dancing on the stage,
right.
And singing, yeah.
His influence was, I think, Harry Belafonte was one of his,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so right.
And he was good.
Yeah,
he was good, and very brilliant. As you know, he wrote a play after he became a member of the Nation of Islam.
Yes,
Organa. Negro Scout back.
Yes,
yeah. And that play was played at the biggest show in our neighborhood on South Side of Chicago,
yes.
The Tivoli Theater.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's where it was put on.
Back in about 1960?
Yeah, 61, around 60.
Yeah,
yeah. 60, yeah.
And so from there, you got to meet him. And then, so you met him in Chicago. It wasn't New York.
No, I met him in Chicago at the restaurant.
At the restaurant.
At the Brooklyn restaurant.
Yeah. And so from there, then apparently he went back and got into the ministry.
He did.
Right.
He went back, and he right away he got into the ministry. He was already used to audiences.
Yeah.
He was an entertainer.
Yeah.
So it was easy for him to get on to the ministry.
Right.
And one day we were talking in his home, in fact, and he would play the violin and for us,
right.
He was an entertainer.
Yeah.
And we ate with him, and we invited him to our home, too. In Philadelphia, he visited me in my home.
Yes.
Now, this was Boston where I visited him. And he was... telling me about his personal life. So I said, what did you study? What was your concentration in college?
Mm-hmm.
He said, theatrics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That says a lot.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
So the ministry had, the teachers had a lot to work with already,
yes.
In,
right.
In Minister Farrakhan.
Yes.
They did not have to help him present himself to an audience.
Right.
They only had to help him know what to deliver,
right?
What language to
speak. Right. Exactly. Did he consult with you much in terms of helping him to understand the religion and understand the Bible? And
yes, he did. Yes, he did. He did, but not near as much and as I would say concentrated,
yes.
Attention. You know, concentrated interest. That Malcolm had, you know,
yes.
It was different.
Right.
It was
right.
Different. But occasionally he would come to me and he would ask me my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
What did I think of him delivering the talk and that this day and including such these materials,
yes.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
So then again, like so Malcolm, he had a big appetite for knowledge and wanted to absorb.
Right.
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 And they both had that, but in their own way.
And he had a lot of faith that if he could present the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's plan to the black man,
yes.
Black people would accept the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership.
Yes.
Yeah. He was convinced of that.
To see all of that beauty and coming together with the three of you and coming up to now 1975 when you became the heir apparent of the Nation of Islam, and how did you feel at the time when a few years later when Minister Farrakhan broke away and left the Nation of Islam, as it was called at the time, under your leadership?
Yes, it was a little over 2 years, maybe
yes.
Close to 3 years.
Yes.
And I had just finished speaking. It was, I believe it was on a Sunday. And he came to me, and I knew that something was very heavy on his heart. Just to look at his face told me that.
Right.
And his friend and kind of a mentor, Brother Larry, you know Brother
yes.
Larry.
Yes, yes.
He was with him. He brought him
with their standing with him.
Right.
And he said, Mr. Farquhar, he said he wants to say something to you, brother minister. I think he'll still call me.
Yeah.
I said, okay, that's what it is. Mr. Farquhar looked at me, and he said, you have discredited your father in the eyes of the people, his follower. He said, and it has caused us to lose a lot of our young ones. He said, a member of my family, he saw me as one of his sons, I know who he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I have decided to go and build the Nation of Islam up again. That was it. That's what he told me.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I had fewer words to say to him.
Yes.
I said, that's what you want to do? Say you don't expect any trouble from me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was it.
Yeah.
And he left.
At that time, he didn't agree with the changes in the direction that you and the world community of Islam at that time didn't want to go that direction at all.
No, and he never did.
Right.
He never did agree with it.
Yeah.
He stayed around and stayed with us.
Yeah.
Because I tried to encourage him. I said, we in Chicago. I said, I was told somebody, this is the rumor,
mm-hmm.
that I brought him from the East Coast, New York area, to separate him from his support out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
Right.
You know me.
Yes.
I don't do things like that. Okay. It was not my decision to bring him to Chicago. It was the leader's decision.
Mm-hmm.
And those leaders were put in place by an Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah.
I didn't come in and take those people out of worship.
Right.
I kept the people in position that Honorable Elijah Muhammad put in position. It was their decision that if we didn't bring him to Chicago, his life would be in danger. Now, he tells me that, I have to agree with him to bring him to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now that he's in Chicago, I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling what can I do for him? What can I do for him?
Yes.
So I know he can speak. I know the man can attract the people. I know he can hold people. I said, the West Side. I always wondered why we didn't give more attention to the West Side. But in the West Side, if we had members, the Falun Gong and Muhammad from the West Side of Chicago, who was given financial support.
Yes.
And was laws of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and in my opinion, they were of equal value to us.
Yes.
Not the South Side so important. No, West Side is as important. That's the way I saw it.
Yes.
Even though we did not have activities on the West Side, so I said, here's a chance now for us to develop the West Side. I said, if you go to West Side, I say I will support you. I said, you could build another big temple on the West Side. Honorable Elijah Muhammad changed it from temple to mosque.
Yes.
Before he died. It was from mosque to temple before he died. You know, as a young student of school, this is the Muslim school, you do it as mosque.
Right.
Mosque number two. He had already changed. But in the 70s, around the early 70s, he changed back to
the
temple.
Right.
So I think it was temple at that time. So I said, you can build a big temple on the West Side. And he looked like, I know he was surprised that I was suggesting that. And his eyes told me that he would have to really work on himself to get himself in the groove for that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But he did attempt to do that, mm-hmm. and they did start something. That was something on the West Side, as you know.
Yes.
But it was a very, very small group of people on the West Side, and they were not having a dynamic leader over there.
Yes.
Well, anyway, that didn't work. I just to close this out on Mr. Farquhar, I wanted Mr. Farquhar to follow his own conscience, but at the same time, I felt Mr. Farquhar was influenced. His decision was influenced by his desperation too. I mentioned that Malcolm's situation was desperate. Yeah. So now we have another man whose situation is desperate.
Yeah.
He's used to attracting thousands and thousands of people. And he's used to making strong appeals for funds and money and donations. And he's used to having a hefty account.
Yes, right.
Bank account.
Access to a lot of blood.
Right.
Right, a lot of resources. Right.
Right, luxurious, a luxury car.
Yeah.
Luxury car.
Right.
life of luxury. So he's used to that, and he's not in that alone. Now he has his wife and he has his children who are used to that. So I have to respect that.
Right.
You know, a man is used to living on a certain level. Now here comes this Mao Zedong without an army, and he's saying that we got to do away with these things.
Right.
And we got to get down with common people and work with them, you know,
right.
And do away with these luxuries. So I can understand that being a motive, too, for him reading.
Mm-hmm. Brothers and sisters, you've been listening to the exclusive interview with Imam W.D. Muhammad from the Communicator program that we did back in 2001. It was our very last interview with yours truly, Wali Muhammad, and the Communicator program. Once again, you want to get a copy of this CD. It's available right now. Send your check or money order for $10 plus $3 shipping and handling, $13 with the check or money order. Send it to Wali Muhammad, the Communicator, 439 East 81st Street, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60619. Once again, that's Wali Muhammad, the Communicator, 439 East 81st Street, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60619. We have more on the CD. To order to get the CD, you'll get to hear the rest and the conclusion of this CD. So send your checks and money orders right away. Supply is limited. We thank you very much today for this special edition of the Communicator, and I thank Brother Imam Alfred Muhammad with Religion Means Alive, and we thank you once again. Peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum.